Welcome to Mystical Dispute, the Limited Magic the Gathering Debate Podcast. I'm Garrett Gardner, aka G-Guards. Carl Chase, aka 2DuckCubed, is out this week because he's a big scaredy cat, but he will be back soon. But today we are
introducing a new challenger!
Welcome to Circovitz, data guru and 17lands.com collaborator.
Thanks for having me. You will very quickly realize that the change is not so large. I'm still a number nerd. I still make dad jokes. I just have a more Eastern European accent.
Just trading one data nerd for a different data nerd. I'm just going to shuffle you all around. And today we are going to debate Wedding Invitation. Wedding Invitation is two colorless for an artifact. When it enters the battlefield, draw a card. You can tap and sack it for target creature can't be blocked this turn. If it's a vampire, it gains lifelink until end of turn. My take? Cards that do nothing are a tough sell for me, so I very rarely pick or play this card.
My take is that you're right, but this card doesn't do nothing. And also, for a colorless card, it is a pretty good card, but in a very narrow selection of color pairs.
Makes sense. Before we get into anything else, I wanted to get one thing off my back about this card. I cannot, for the life of me, remember which card Wedding Invitation or Wedding Announcement is. So that's a huge minus in my book. I just confuse the two of them. I hate it.
I think that if you would make this episode about Wedding Announcement, it would be a very short one.
Yes.
And it would be, play it. Independently of the color pair you're in, just find a space for it.
Just play that card and make everybody groan.
It would be shorter than the Tovelar's Huntmaster episode.
Well, let's jump right into
Data Crunch.
What does the data say? Where is it good and where is it bad? And I'm really excited since we have a 17lands.com collaborator here with us. I'm going to let you take this section. We use 17lands data every single week.
You use their data. I'm just a collaborator. Just want to put it out there. These guys are doing so much work and I never would like to even get an inch of the credit for the work that they're doing. However, I do collaborate with them. I do help them some testing. So technically I'm a collaborator, but the sort of collaborator you don't want to have. The one that, you know, gets all the credit and doesn't that much of the work.
Well, shout out to the whole 17lands team. Seriously, it is the best thing to come for Limited Magic in, I don't know, the entire time I've played. So shout out to them all. It's amazing.
I know, right?
Tell me what kind of data was collected on this card.
So first of all, the card has a very decent game in hand win rate of 56.7% as of yesterday. So that's over the average for the 17lands user, which means that the card is actually a benefit in most decks. But then I looked at it a bit more granularly, and actually the win rates vary quite widely between archetypes. And it goes from 58.5% in black-red. Surprise, in the vampire's archetype is better.
Yeah, big surprise with all the vampires.
And it goes down to 45.8% in white-green. So it is a card that is good, but it has a narrow home, as I said. Probably three archetypes are really good with it, two archetypes are sort of medium with it, and five archetypes are actually pretty bad.
So it's a colorless card, but it's actually a gold card.
It is a colorless card that has some gold tint, but it's a hybrid gold mana, I think.
Right. Yeah. Right. Okay. I mean, that kind of changes the look on the card a lot, right? It literally almost has a red/black color symbol in the card despite being colorless. So you have to evaluate it as such, which is one of the ways that I viewed it, but it's not something that I value very highly in any of my red or black decks.
Okay. So it's not good in every red and in every black deck,
right?
But it's particularly good in black red and the blue red, because spell synergies in this format are not instant sorcery, but any non-creature spell, which Wedding Invitation is.
Right, right.
And what surprised me slightly when I looked at the data, it's actually doing pretty good numbers in white black.
Huh.
And then it's sort of middle of the pack in red, green, and blue, green. And it's pretty poor in white, red, black, green, white, blue, blue, black, and white, green. It's especially poor in white, green.
Yeah, that 45% is.
In blue, black, it's 48.6%. So also really pretty poor. But with white, black, it's 57.1%. With blue, red, it's 58%. And with black, red, it's 58.5% game in hand win rate.
That's really high for a common.
Actually, in black, red, it is the highest common except for Sigarda's Imprisonment, which is a sort of an odd one out.
The white card?
Probably. Well, it's a very small sample size.
I see.
Which probably means it's in a particular decks that probably have something like Edgar or Wedding Announcement,
right,
which means
right.
that the deck is good because of those splashed bombs.
Riding off the coattails of the bombs in the format.
Sometimes you have to piggyback on the, you know, like I do on 17lands, people.
Well, let's move into the next section with
Pulse check.
Does the community over or underrate it at large?
Looking at ALSA of 7.37, community underrates it by quite a large amount. Mm-hmm. 7.37, it means that it will wheel roughly 30-40% of the time. So you don't need to prioritize picking the card, but you probably should start picking it at least and start using it in your decks, especially when you're in the colors that I mentioned.
In my experience, I don't actually see it across the table very often, but when I do, sometimes I'm scared of it and sometimes I breathe a sigh of relief, because I think the essential part of this card is I think you need to gain the life, right? If you're not gaining the life, the tempo swing is so bad for you and it just doesn't do enough.
Yes, but I think that it's relatively easy to set it up. And also don't forget that the card replaces itself, so the cost of putting it in your deck is relatively minimal.
I've got a question about that, but I think it's better suited if we go right into
rank it.
Where do you and where do you not play and pick it? You said it replaces itself, and I have this question a lot about cantrip style cards. It replaces itself with a random card in your deck, so it's kind of like 40% of a land and 60% of a spell. And usually you want one or the other, and generally you're gonna want a spell. So if 40% of the time in the late game, this is just a land rather than an actionable spell, like it is taking up a spell slot in your deck. So when you play a bunch of these, do you have to cut down on the number of lands you play? I often get tripped up on this when deck building, when I have a lot of cantrips that are cheap, because one of the things it can do is you can play it on two and draw a land if you need lands. But if that's the board state that you're playing into, that's a bad thing. You're paying two mana to do nothing. So ideally you want to play it late, but you want it to also draw a spell. So in my mind, cantrips are actually like 60% of a spell. And so that what they actually do has to be impactful enough for me to want to include it. Do you have a response to that?
So yes, I generally prefer one mana cantrips to play the role that you've been describing. Two mana cantrips are just occupying the space of creatures that are normally useful. However, in this format, two drops are particularly poor.
That's true.
So I actually sometimes don't mind playing it on turn two, and I'd rather play Lantern Bearer turn one this turn two if I play a blue-red deck that uses it. But of course, I would like to keep it for later when I already have a couple of Kessick Flame Breathers, and then I can play this, draw into some other cantrip, and then ping them for four.
Yeah, that makes sense, but it makes me reluctant to pick up cards like this early because I don't want to have several of them in my deck because it's just ideally played late and it doesn't affect the board and it kind of scares me out of having a proactive game plan.
I do agree with that. I don't think that you want to have more than one of it in your deck unless you're super heavy on vampires. I actually do have some data on that I did on the side.
I knew you would.
Of course I would. And this basically looks at the number of copies and the number of vampires in your deck, because I thought, well, the more vampires, the better.
Yes, of course.
So let's look at some critical numbers in here. And of course, this data is slightly skewed by the fact that most vampires will be in the black-red decks, and it is the best in the black-red deck. But it's also most played in the black-red deck. So, I mean, there is no escaping that this particular analysis will be slightly skewed to the vampires archetype. But most of the time, it's one or two copies. Very, very few people put three copies, and numbers there are just not big enough to get some kind of valuable information out of it. It looks like there is not much difference between one or two copies, but generally you want to be about 6 plus vampires to make the card useful. And if you get to the point where you have 10 to 12 vampires, it actually becomes beneficial to have a couple of copies of them.
Yeah, so essentially you're making the case that, you know, the more vampires, the more you're going to be able to gain that life, which is going to make up for the tempo loss of paying that 2 mana. And you're also going to get in damage, which black-red, it needs to do that final push of damage a lot of the time, and that's where it helps. And there's several vampires in the format, like Falconwrath Celebrants, Bloodthirsty Socialite, that can do 4 or 5 points of damage. And that's a huge life swing. So totally understand getting it there. But again, I'm reluctant to pick this up early, even though you said it's the top common performer. That means it's performing better than a Braid and Fireblessed Bolt in red-black?
Yes, although the differences are very microscopic, so I wouldn't put any weight on those differences.
But close enough still.
It's still in the same ballpark while being much more available for you to draft and to put in your deck. It's true that in black-red decks, you want to socialize. I think that in white-black decks, mainly mainly put when you have several copies of the Socialite, because that will allow you to close the game, and white black has problems with closing up the game, and it also has problem with not so much card draw. But I played it in blue red, and I played a couple of Ancestral Angers on a vampire, and I gave it unblockability, and that did the job, basically. So you can do it in sort of combo version as well.
That all makes sense to me. So basically there's three color pairs where you want it. Black red, obviously. White black, if you have enough vampires for the life gain to matter, and then blue red for the spells matter. But where are you taking it? Because there's like key parts of all three of those strategies that I'd rather take over the invitation and then hope to wheel it, because you did mention that it wheels 30 to 40% of the time.
I would say you are not in a hurry to pick it. You don't need to pick it as the top common in black red, because the rest of the people don't treat it as such. So you pick it on the wheel or in a pack that is particularly empty and you have nothing better to pick it. So you have one and you can forget about it and move on with your life.
All right. I just don't want to pick one of these up in the first like four or five picks of any pack usually.
And you don't have to. You should be able to get it late. And if you're not getting it late, then you're probably playing in a pod against someone that knows that the card is powerful. Mm-hmm. And also that there were very few of them open. Because even if you're playing on a pod where people know that Wedding Invitation is a solid card, those people do know that you don't want more than one copy. So even if they will pick this one copy, you should get the second one and they wouldn't be that interested because they already got their one.
Well, let's go into the final topic.
Instruction manual.
How do you play it and how do people misplay it?
So one thing we didn't talk about during the look at the data is that this is not an early card. This is a card that excels in the later game when you can actually pay two mana, draw a card and dig into something that you can cast as a creature to double spell in a turn. What is interesting is that its opening hand win rate is much lower than its win rate when it's been drawn later in the game. So clearly this is not the card you want in your opening hand. And this of course means that you probably don't want to play too many copies of it. It's probably like a sort of one-off.
So we're talking about where it's good, but it's obviously really bad in a couple other color pairs. You pointed out the 45% win rate in white-green. Are people playing it there? Obviously they shouldn't be, right?
Good part of the data is that it seems that people evaluate it correctly, and most of the time they don't play it in the archetypes when it's bad. I think that by the time of the format we are in right now, people figured out most of the combinations.
Right.
And you know, this is not an obvious card that people will play. This is probably a card that will be taken by players that are sort of a bit more advanced and they are a bit more with the hand on the pulse of what's going on in the format.
Right.
And I could see that the numbers were roughly linked to the win rates. So people play it when it's good.
It also makes sense to me that someone would just throw this in their deck as their 23rd or 22nd card if they have a train wreck. So that would probably crash the win rates in some of those colored pairs, right?
It might be the case. It might be even the 24th because they are not sure if they want to play 17 or 16 lands and they want to go for sort of 16 and a half of playing 16 lands and a cantrip. And actually, you know, one thing that we didn't mention before, but it is a colorless card. So if you're color screwed, which will be a good 10% of the time when you're playing, you can play that and dig for the land independently on which color you're screwed, which is quite useful in some cases.
Right. It's a gold card that you can pay for colorless mana.
Exactly.
It's interesting to me that it's also pretty bad in white-red stats-wise, because white-red does seem like it's trying to push damage early, but maybe is that a reflection on just white-red being a little bit less powerful of a color pair, do you think?
I was actually quite surprised about that number. But the number was really consistent. It was really poor in that, because when you think about it, white-red also has Signpost Uncommon, is a vampire.
Right, right. Markov Walter.
It will play the Falconer as Celebrants. It wants to play aggressive games.
Exactly.
But for some reason, the card just doesn't perform in there. I didn't figure out why, and I don't want to give you complete wild speculations that are based on nothing.
That's what we're all about here in Mystical Dispute. Wild speculation.
I thought that was your job, no? I'm replacing Carl. I'm supposed to give numbers here. I think my parting thought with this card is try it. Make sure that your deck has six vampires. Make sure that your white-black deck that you put it in has Bloodcrazed Socialites. Make sure that your blue-red deck that you put it in has Kessick Flame Breathers and maybe some Ancestral Angers that you can squeeze through. So play with the card. It's better than it looks, because when you think about it, oh yeah, it's just like a replaceable cantrip artifact. No, if it will deal four damage on top of drawing that card, two mana, four damage, draw a card, not great, but not terrible, and two mana, draw a card, drain for four. Now that's a good card.
That all makes sense to me. I think I'm going to stick with my priors here and I'm going to try to wheel it the majority of the time. But if I'm really vampire dense, I'm going to bump this one up a few picks.
Oh no, I still think you should wheel it. I still think you should try to wheel it. We don't try to be cute here. I don't want to get the card because I know it's better much earlier. No, I'm a greedy bastard. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. If I can squeeze out like a decent creature, have this one wheel, I'm super happy. This is something that Ryan Sachs was once explaining, that if you pick a particular card as your pick one, let's say that you have Bloodthirst Harvester and you have it against a rare that is comparable level as Bloodthirst Harvester. If you have a wedding invitation in this pack, you are not picking Bloodthirst Harvester. You're picking Bloodthirst Harvester and Wedding Invitation as your first pick because it will wheel. And I think that's how you should treat it, as a kicker bonus to your first pick, because you know that you can most likely wheel it.
It's a cherry on the packs you open that you see.
Oh, yes.
Well, I think that about wraps it up. So thanks for listening to Mystical Dispute. You can check out our website at mysticaldispute.com. I'm Garrett Gardner. You can find me at twitch.tv/gguards. And Serkovitz, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter/Serkovitz or on Twitch/Serkovitz or on YouTube, also Serkovitz. In that order, probably, in terms of success of finding me. I'm doing my Thursday seminar series. I'm restarting them for the new year because I didn't do them for the Christmas period. I think I'm going to make an episode about forcing drafts. Is it something you're interested in?
That sounds amazing. I love the seminars. I've tuned into a couple of them. Definitely check those out if you haven't. And thank you so much for joining me. I had a lot of fun. I appreciate it.
No problem. It's always a pleasure to get one up on Carl.
You definitely beat him in my book. Shout out to 17 Lands for the data. Please check them out at 17lands.com and you can support them on Patreon. Until next time, stay chill. All right, so I'm testing, and could you say a couple words for me?
Couple of words for you.
Yeah, perfect. I knew it. I knew you were going to do it.